The Athletic.
Hardy takes, sends Lloris the wrong way, and sends the 8,000 inside the King Power into raptures. That's the sound they haven't heard here for 14 months. Oh, we're going to have a penalty here. Davinson Sanchez caught out by the movement of Vardy. Grabbed hold of the Leicester number 9. And Anthony Taylor gives Leicester their second penalty of the afternoon. Vardy against Lloris, take 2. Same result. He's left statuesque, the French international. And Jamie Vardy restores Leicester City's lead. And the full-time whistle has gone here at the King Power Stadium. So for the second season in a row, it's close but no Champions League cigar for Leicester City.
Hello and welcome to 5000 to 1, the Leicester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm Rob Tanner. Joining me as always, and for the final time this season, is former captain and Foxes legend, Matt Elliott. How you doing, Matt?
Yeah, very well, Rob. Thank you. Sad but true, isn't it? The end to another campaign, but to be honest, I think a lot of people are ready for a little rest, aren't they, Rob? Not that you're going to get much rest with the Euros, etc. That'll be on our screens every day, but it's been a packed season, hasn't it? You know, congested, and it's been shortened and condensed as well, obviously. Loads going on, particularly from a Leicester City point of view, as ever. But I think everyone is just in the mood for a little bit of a breather when all's said and done.
Well, yeah, because the end of last season after restart seems to have blended into this season as well, with a very short break in between. And we've been relentless, haven't we, throughout this campaign covering Leicester City. And what a final week we had, Matt. But before we get into that and reflections on the campaign and throwing it forwards to what needs to be done for another top four challenge next season, I'd just like to remind our listeners that right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/LeicesterPod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/LeicesterPod. Right now, let's reflect on the final game of this season, all to play for against Tottenham. And what an 8 days that was, the highs and lows of being a Leicester City supporter. I mean, to the extreme. And it's understandable that after the euphoria of the FA Cup victory, that Leicester fans would be disappointed at the end of the season, having been in the top four for 242 days again for the second season running. They've just dropped out in the final week. Mixed emotions, I would imagine, Matt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, contrasting emotions, certainly. The last couple of weeks of the season was a blur, wasn't it, Rob? There was so much happening. You know, poor results against Newcastle, turn it around against Man United, and then obviously the cup final and all the glory and drama that went on there, and then disappointment and frustration, after the Lord Mayor's show effect on the Tuesday against Chelsea. Then everything was set up for a big grand finale, wasn't it? And it threatened to occur at one stage, but didn't quite come around, did it, in the end, and materialise. But a roller coaster ride, that's for sure. But ultimately, I think most people will be quite content with Leicester's season, all said and done. Yes, an element of frustration, disappointment, of course. Brendan Rodgers admitted so himself, and I'm sure they would have loved not only the prestige, but the financial boost that a Champions League slot would have provided. But listen, all things said and done, it was a wonderful season, a wonderful effort in very difficult circumstances to come away with a historical FA Cup, a European slot, albeit in the Europa League. The club is moving forward, that's for sure. And they'll be looking to do even better things next season. And who would go against Leicester in their quest for achieving the unachievable yet again? But it's been a good season for us to be reflecting on as well, hasn't it? You know, plenty to discuss all the time, and lots to look forward to as well, for sure.
I think what was probably the most heartbreaking aspect of the final day was the fact that they had it in their own hands, and Brendan had said before the game, make sure that if a door opens, you're able to walk through it. And the door did open at Villa Park. As we predicted, that was going to be the fixture where something could happen for Leicester to give them a chance to break into that top four on the final day. And they were there, weren't they? Villa were ahead at Chelsea. Chelsea had a goal, disallowed VAR again, getting involved. Two penalties for Leicester. It was so dramatic, as this, the finale of the season has been. Then Schmeichel, 15 minutes ago, they were in the Champions League. And Schmeichel comes out for a corner, comes off the back of his hand into his own net. That's the killer moment for me, not the Gareth Bale. I mean, the fact that Spurs could bring a Gareth Bale off the bench in the final 10, 15 minutes to make the difference. You know, Leicester couldn't do that. And I think that sort of shows how far Leicester's still got to go in terms of the recruitment and the building. But yeah, I imagine the heartbreak will continue for a few days, you know, especially when they watch the Champions League final at the weekend and they go, oh, we could have been in that competition. But overall, I totally agree with you. I think at the start of the season, if you had offered the fans the FA Cup to be lifted by Leicester captain for the first time ever and finish fifth and to get into Europe again and with a higher points tally than the previous season, I think fans would have said, yeah. Most fans would have said, yeah, that's a successful season. But it showed how far the club's come in terms of expectation, that some fans will remain disappointed with the outcome and the narrative that goes around the fact that they've dropped out of the top four in the last 4 days. But I think that's sort of negating how far Leicester City have come in a short period of time to compete with these clubs.
Yeah, 100%, Rob. You know, signs of progress without doubt are there. You know, they're there before your eyes to look at for those reasons that you just mentioned there. And I thought Brendan Rodgers was very open, as he normally is. You know, he was sort of quite contrite, and he didn't try and cover up his emotions in terms of disappointment of not qualifying for the Champions League. You know, it'd be trying to pull the wool over people's eyes, really, if you made out that, oh, you're happy enough with your situation. You know, you're always striving to be as good as you can, and Brendan mentions that regularly. But he sees the signs, and he's very positive. He was adamant when questioned about his future, that his future lies at Leicester City, 200% in his words. So that seems quite categoric. Again, good cause for positivity, you know, from Leicester City supporters' point of view. It was almost ironic, really, and somewhat typical, I suppose, of the last couple of weeks, stroke the whole season. You know, the fact that Kasper Schmeichel, along with Yuri Tielemans, was the hero in the FA Cup final with that brilliant save from Mason Mount. And Chilwell also on a previous occasion, you know, match-winning save. And then, you know, he's doing everything right. He's been one of the players of the season. And then Kasper Schmeichel, of all people, comes out with a basic error and a misjudgment on the cross. Okay, he claimed he was affected by the presence of Sanchez. Don't really go along with that in truth. You know, sometimes you have to hold your hands up, but him of all people. And it was a big blow. And even then, there was drama to follow. Harry Kane, you know, in the build-up to Gareth Bale's goal, the third goal, you know, it did strike his hand. How it wasn't determined applicable by VAR, I'm not quite sure, even though it would have been harsh. You know, wasn't spotted initially, but it was by Leicester City players. Just wasn't their day. It wasn't their day, was it? And I agree with you in terms of it highlighted a few areas where there are shortcomings from Leicester's point of view in terms of depth of squad. If they want to continue to perform at the level they are or hopefully improve that level of competition, they're going to have to make a few additions. And we'll talk about that in a minute, I'm sure, exactly what areas and perhaps what players are in the pipeline. But it was a hell of an effort by the players, though. I mean, as always, there are at least two sides to every argument or discussion, really. You know, the injuries that a lot of teams suffered throughout the season, Leicester certainly more than most, if not every one of them, Liverpool included, in terms of key players, how long they were out for, and the effect that had, the lack of depth in the squad, the way the pack was shuffled by Brendan Rodgers was superb. And I think it's been understated, really. It goes under the radar a touch, as do a lot of things with Leicester City. But all said and done, when people look in the memory bank in a few years' time, that FA Cup was lifted. at Wembley by Leicester City. Never been done before. What a moment to treasure.
Well, absolutely. Let's treasure it a little bit more then, because Joel, our producers, asked us to come up with our own end of season awards. Now, play of the season, game of the season, and goal of the season, for me, are all related. I don't know if they will be for you, Matt, but it's all predictable, I imagine. Play of the season for me was Youri Tielemans. Consistency, played 60 games, played 60 games all season in a condensed season. I mean, there have been signs that towards the end there, he's been running out of steam, and now he's going to go on to the Euros and play an important part for Belgium. And if they get to the final on July 11th, that means he misses the start of pre-season with Leicester, and he's in straight into another season. But it's a phenomenal effort for him. So Youri's my player of the year. The goal at Wembley is my goal of the year, and the game of the season was that FA Cup final for the drama in the second half.
Well, there you go. Pretty straightforward, Rob. That's the conclusion of our awards this season, isn't it? But I'll agree with you on two out of three, and I could be persuaded to agree with you on all three. But I just to mix it up a little bit as much as anything, Youri Tielemans, player of the year without any shadow of a doubt. Kasper Schmeichel as well is probably in there, as is Johnny Evans. That's probably your top three in whatever order you like. That Youri comes out on top, especially on the back of the FA Cup final. I know that I've mentioned already Schmeichel was, you know, a co-hero, if you like. But Youri was the man. That's the memory that will stick in people's minds, isn't it? And, yeah, he's just been churning out game after game, performance after performance, isn't he? And contributing to a very high level, week in, week out, game in, game out. And that's not something he was doing early on in his career at Leicester. I thought he was a little bit short on his match fitness, you know, the pace of the game. And he's worked really hard on that, typical of his professionalism and the character of the man and player. And, he's shown what he is, a top-class performer, without a doubt. Had there not been injuries, it's a good sign. I think there would have been six or seven candidates, you know, quite conceivably, really. We'll never know, because most players were out for a long period of time. Harvey Barnes would have been in the running. James Justin would have been in the running at the halfway stage. So, that's a positive thing that so many players perform to such a high level. But game of the season. The actual game, do you know what? I 100% understand you picked the FA Cup final because of the tension that was there and the nervousness and the excitement and the drama and the closeness of the game swinging, you know, sort of one way to another. It could have gone any way at any time. And ultimately, obviously, success for Leicester and the joy that followed. So I can't disagree with you on that. But I think probably the best performance, if you like, in terms of, in a one isolated game is against Man City.
Yeah, what a great game that was.
To go there and play. I mean, I remember Leicester, I think it was the first time they'd employed, I might be wrong, but a back three, and people were thinking, oh no, they're going to be negative. What they're going to do, just try and contain, concede an early goal from Mahrez of all people. And people had given up the ghost already in the first half, thinking, well, we've gone out to contain, we conceded, we're not going to score. Are we going to keep the scoreline down, basically? And lo and behold, they turned the game literally on its head, didn't they? Okay, penalties involved heavily, but they were clear-cut penalties, but two superb goals, one from Vardy, one from Maddison. And that just doesn't happen at the Etihad, does it? You know, Man City, one, losing a game, that's enough of a shock in itself, but conceding five goals with the swagger that Leicester City produced, you know, I thought that was a huge moment for the group of players, you know, sort of their identity, their realisation of how good they are capable of being. They didn't follow it up to the level they would have hoped, you know, consistently, but some very good signs there. Very good signs indeed. But
throwing the Leeds performance away as well in November.
Leeds away was 4-1. Yeah, pretty comprehensive. There are a couple more that stick my mind. I mean, not that they played particularly well at home against Liverpool, but for that 15-minute blitz where they turned over the then champions, that was some performance. I thought Man United in the quarterfinal of the Cup was also very impressive. The way they were brave, courageous, went at Man United, got in their faces, upset them. They weren't intimidated by the quality names that Man United possess and deservedly got the win. Chelsea at home as well, Frank Lampard, one of his last games, etc. So, you know, there were good performances, exceptional performances sprinkled throughout the season. But, yeah, I think we've just about got the right choice, though.
Hello, listeners. Sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favour to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
Well, here's a little segue into the next part of the podcast as well, because I'm going to ask you now about signing of the season. Now, they only made three, and yeah. I think we can rule out Cengizunda. I don't think we can class him in the running, even though it's only a three-horse race for signing of the season. But both Castagna and Fofana have made a big contribution this season. They've been great signings so far. Fantastic recruitment policy continues with those two. I've got to give it to Fofana, though. I mean, I know Castagna's done really well, but Fofana's been exceptional at times. And you could see it was just too much for him. I don't think the plan was for him to play as much football and to be exposed to the physicality of the Premier League at such an intense level so early on in his time. I think they wanted to ease him in. But needs must with them all dropping like flies and the amount of injuries they had, certainly in defence as well. But the boy has certainly stepped up to the plate, hasn't he? And he looks every inch a class signing.
Yeah, there was no chance of being bedded in, was there?
No, straight into
fray. But I think you're right. Ideally, yeah, he would have been introduced. He's up for it, though, isn't he? And he's up to it. Yes, not just his natural ability. You know, he's such a... He's got all the raw ingredients, hasn't he? That's for sure. And in terms of physicality... listen, he can cope the endurance. Maybe he's still growing, developing, isn't he? So, you know, they need to keep an eye on that. Maybe you're consistently turning out performances, but yeah, I mean, Castagna, it almost slipped under the radar for me in terms of signing, because he just came in, fitted in so smoothly. I feel like he's been there longer than he has. He's just sort of part of the furniture. You know what you're going to get from him, but the dramatic impact, if that could ever be made by a centre-half, was made by Fofana, wasn't it? You know, the whole of the Premier League sat up and took notice, and after about five or six performances, you could hear people connected with other clubs recommending that the big six, for want of a better phrase, should be looking at him straight away, you know, to cause problems. Even Man United, who have got their issues in the middle of defence. And perhaps down the line, that may be a problem for Leicester City, because you feel like he's got the potential to be anything he wants to be. I think he's a little bit raw, a little bit over-eager at times, but that can be tempered. He can learn that. You can see his raw enthusiasm gets the better of him on occasion. But like I say, the main ingredients are there. He's got everything you would want from a centre-half. You know, can play, he's strong, he's aggressive, he's rapidly quick, you know, he's physical, sometimes he looks like he's an experienced campaigner, other times a little bit of a novice, just a bit over keen. As I say, that can be tempered. And Leicester have certainly got a real player on their hands. And he's a delight to watch. There aren't many centre-halves that you get excited about watching, but you look forward to watching young Wesley Fofana playing.
Absolutely. I mean, and they've got to do it again. This is a massive summer now for Leicester City. I mean, we can dissect the season and look where it went wrong in terms of them being in a position to be able to clinch Champions League. And we can talk about the home form, 9 defeats. We can talk about set pieces, how they failed to defend them and score from them. But ultimately, I think it was the strength in depth in the squad that just wasn't there in a season when they, in total, it was 142 games players missed. There were 7 players that missed double figures or more games through injury this season. I know a lot has been spoken about other clubs and their injuries, but not a lot has been spoken about the amount of injuries that Brendan Rodgers had to deal with. And they did deal with them so well to even be in contention. But to get across the line, they just didn't have that strength in depth in the squad. And now they face a big summer of rebuilding in some areas of the squad, with Wes Morgan retiring, Christian Fuchs moving on. Matty James wasn't in the Premier League squad, but he's moved on as well. under, they're not going to follow through his loan and make his move permanent. So straight away, there's three players you need to replace in the squad. And to push Leicester City on, they need at least another two. And we know that one of them is going to be Samari. He's going to be coming in. I hope I've said that right. He's going to be coming in, midfield player. So he's straight away bolstering midfield. Rodgers said he wanted physicality in the side, more physicality. He feels his side have been a little bit lightweight at times. He will certainly bring that in midfield. But I'd imagine you need a centre-half. They're going to be looking for a left-back because of James Justin's injury to help Luke Thomas, because they can't just go in with one left-back. I know Pereira and Castagne can both play there as well, but it's not ideal. I think he prefers now a left-sided full-back for left-back. And you've got to have a winger for under. And he wants to bring in a striker as well. There's a lot of work to be done.
Certainly is. Certainly is, isn't it? I mean, despite the exceptional season that Leicester have had, the way that it's been managed, really, is very impressive. And, Leicester City supporters will know, because they focus on their own club's issues and problems and how they fare. Externally, I think it gets bypassed a little bit. And, there's focus on the major clubs, if you like, your typical big clubs. So there's less sort of scrutiny. And people just give a sort of, not uneducated, but an undetailed opinion at times. And the injuries that Leicester have had, with the amount of games they've had, first venture into the Europa League, and there was a bit of disappointment how it finished. But before that, Leicester coped remarkably well, didn't they, with the whole tough schedule of games, coming thick and fast. And injuries, but it didn't perturb them at all, and it was really impressive to see the way. Just ran out of gas a little bit, run out of steam, run out of ideas a little bit. Towards the end of the season, it became all about sort of grafting and grinding the way through, wasn't it? It wasn't fluent, free flowing football like you'd seen in earlier parts of the season. But you're right, going through the areas of the team that look to need reinforcing. I mean, I think Brendan ideally wants to play a 4-2-3-1. I know he's not restricting himself to any one system or even style of football, but that's, to me, is his favoured system. That's how he gets the best out of his team, when they played in that way, and it suits the individuals he had. But you're right. When they were at their free-flowing best, shall we say, Barnes was rampant. Vardy was he was banging goals in. He wasn't featuring too much in the game, but he was finishing off moves, in those vital areas. And it was trying to find the opposite wide man, wasn't it? Inside right position, if you like. Albright had been there, Perez had been there, Maddison even, Under. None of them really fit the bill. Maddison's better in the central area. And then you've got Tielemans and Ndidi in support, but Leicester need reinforcements. They do. Even centre half. Now, if you're talking about playing a back three, then they're going to need a fourth one, aren't they? If they're going to revert to that system at times, without a doubt. Especially now, Wes Morgan's out of the equation. I know other players can cover James Justin, Castagne to a degree, but what do they do if they want to play a four? Can they afford to have four top class centre halves? It's finding the levels of players, isn't it? The left back, as you say, is an issue. I think, in truth, they need another attacking midfielder, really. If Maddison, for whatever reason, is not performing at the top of his game or is injured, that's a vital area. Wide players, they need another striker as well, despite Iheanacho's resurgence. So, yeah, I doubt they'll end up with as many players as I would like them to. In an ideal world, but you certainly would envisage at least four additions, I think, to maintain the level of performance that they're at the moment. If they want to go and improve, then they're really going to have to get to work, aren't they? That's for sure. Be interested to see how it develops.
And they're going to have to be really shrewd about it as well, because finances will be tight. The pandemic has had an impact on Leicester's finances, as it has done in the whole game. Sumeri, we understand, will be under £20 million. I mean, the total deal with add-ons and what have you, clauses in his contract, it will, might take it over £20 million. But that's the bracket they're going to be in. And let's have a look at some of the runners and riders for each position. I mean, at centre-back, I'd love to get your opinion on this. I mean, James Tartowski at Burnley is one that they've been trying for a couple of windows now. Not been able to get him. He's going into the last year of his contract at Burnley. There's some suggestion that Burnley might even try and hold on to and let his contract run down. Tarkowski wants to go and face another challenge. He's one option, but there's the two Turkish lads as well. Demiral, who was close to coming to Leicester until he did his ACL. And we understand Kabak, who Liverpool have decided not to sign after his loan spell. He is also being considered by Leicester. Now, as you just said there, with Fofana, Soyuncu and Evans, are they going to bring in a fourth top-class one, a fourth international? Will they go for it like Tarkowski, or will they go for a younger guy like Kabak and try and develop him, albeit with the risk of a Benkovic situation developing?
Yeah. Well, who'd be a manager, eh, Rob? I don't know. It's, you know, you've got certain confines with which you've got to work and do your business. As you say, finances obviously come into it. You don't get a free rein. But I could see Tarkowski happening. But is he going to want to leave Burnley when he's probably got other options and then come to Leicester, seemingly fourth in line, certainly initially? You know, that might not remain the case. He's a you know, very good defender in his own right. But he'll want to be certainly, you know, considered for a starting 11. He won't want to be on the bench for any length of time, will he? And yeah, I don't know. He improved in a short space of time, because initially he looked very rocky, didn't he? But he was thrown into the deep end to a degree. But I'm not convinced about that option necessarily. But without writing him off, as you say, Demiral injured, obviously knows Soyuncu pretty well. But again, I think I do like. I mean, you've got obviously French and Turkish there in Fofana and Soyuncu. I do like having a communicator at the back there who speaks the natural language. I mean, maybe that seems a little bit old-fashioned, but for organisational skills, I think it's very important. And I think you've seen that when Johnny Evans hasn't been in the mix. You know, it's gone a little bit loose at times. But I like Tarkowski. I like him. I think he's good, solid, dependable, can play a bit as well. Yeah, physical. Got an eye for a goal or two as well. And if you're on about improving the physicality, he'd certainly do that.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and I'm here to tell you what The Athletic has planned across its podcast network during the Euros. My pod with David Ornstein will become the Athletic's England show throughout the tournament, to bring you all the latest news and insight from inside the England camp every single day. Then we'll also have nightly editions of the Totally Football show, taking a look at all the big talking points from the competition and looking ahead to the next day's fixtures. Now, if you're feeling nostalgic for tournaments past, we've produced an 8-part documentary series that tells some fascinating stories from both on and off the pitch from the last 8 Euros. Elsewhere, Michael Cox's Zonal Marking Pod will offer an in-depth tactical breakdown of all the biggest games, while Adam Hurry's Football Cliché Show will take a look at the tournament's alternative storylines. So, as this never-ending domestic season finally draws to a close, we'll have plenty of Euro 2020 coverage for you to enjoy as the tournament gets underway in just a couple of weeks' time.
Well, what about left back then? Because from what I understand, Leicester are looking to bring in somebody on a short-term deal at the
Bertrand's
moment to cover at left back. They've got Luke Thomas. They've got Justin, who they see also as long-term. Ryan Bertrand has been an option they've been exploring. Now, if they want a one-year option, he's only 31. He's going to want longer. So that one looks unlikely.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to follow up their interest in Robin Gosens at Atalanta, the German international, because he may be too expensive at this time. And I think they see Justin and Thomas as the long-term solution at left-back. But a short-term deal. I mean, I think they're going to have to be creative with some loans here and things like that to bring in players to cover these positions. But Ryan Bertram's an interesting option.
He is. I think Brendan would have known him from Chelsea days, would he?
He would, yes.
Going back then, see, he knows the inner workings of the player. And, yeah, I like him. Always have done. You know, he's a talented boy, isn't he? And say, boy, 31 years old, the time ticks by. But yeah, no, he's got the necessary qualities. But as you say, I can't, it'd be a bit of an odd one, wouldn't it? Just to sign for a year or even I suppose 2 years at 31 is not too bad. But I'm sure there are other options maybe for Bertrand, you know, more permanent based. You are looking, you would imagine you're looking at a loan situation, aren't you? Looking at perhaps not necessarily clubs even in the Premier League, but players that are on the periphery who you wouldn't expect to be, who just want a break, want a change of scenery, put themselves in the window even maybe. But if you're looking at it in terms of Thomas hasn't let anyone down, has he? I mean, he's got an FA Cup winners medal on his sideboard. That shows how well he's done. James Justin was as good as anyone in the Premier League, wasn't he, in whatever position you wanted to put him in across that defensive line up until he got the injury. So I think they'd be right to be patient and wait for him to come back round and again show his worth. So the loan option looks the most likely, doesn't it, Rob? I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't think there's a clear contender. I mean, we know they're interested in Bertrand, but there isn't any other options that we are aware of at the moment. Let's move into midfield then, because obviously Sumeri's coming in. He's going to add that physicality. He's that deep lying, but also athletic type, but dare I say, Patrick Vieira-esque, as some people have described him. But that's a big, big mantle for him.
A lot of people have been compared to Vieira, and
they have over the years
stood up to that tag, but some player he was.
Further forward, though, I mean, again, circumstances and the finances may dictate this. I mean, but they have in the past gone in for Christian Eriksen, Martin Odegaard, couldn't get them. Eriksen was way too expensive, and I don't think that's going to change now. Odegaard chose to go to Arsenal, didn't really pull up any trees there, but he's gone back to Real Madrid, perhaps alone. Is an option there if they could try and do something like that. They went then for Nathaniel Chalobah, couldn't get that off on pull that off on final day. But a little wild card is they've got Kieran Dewsbury-Hall coming in back in to the club from his loan at Luton. Now, he scored a few goals for Luton. I know that's the Championship. I know if Leicester are going to be aspiring to be Champions League contenders, they might want the finished article. They might need an Eriksen or an Odegaard. But it's going to be interesting to see if he plays a part next season.
Well, yeah, it's such fine lines, isn't it? Because you want to progress and you want to be successful while you're progressing. Sometimes you have to sort of bite the bullet a little bit. And, to go from the likes of, you mentioned names there, been put forward, Eriksen, I don't think that's likely at all, really. And there's that little bit of a stigma, despite how well Leicester have done. People have got this sort of perception about levels of clubs, haven't they? Especially players from abroad. They naturally look to the likes of, I don't know, Arsenal's, Man United's, whatever. And there's a certain sort of category of players that would probably be a little bit hesitant still to come to Leicester City. Wages, is an issue. It's got to be balanced, hasn't it? And obviously, amount of any signing on fees, transfer fees, sorry. But Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, he's an interesting one because I think Brendan likes him. He's spoken about him very fondly in the media, publicly. And he's in all sorts of plaudits at Luton. Okay, it's only Luton, but you can only play at the level that you're put into. Kieran's a lovely lad. I knew him from my coaching days at the academy when I was just involved on a part-time basis. You know, you couldn't meet a nicer boy. Brilliant attitude, technically very sound. Question marks about him physically wise. You know, he's only quite diminutive in stature, but he's developed, he's matured. That's not a problem. He gets around the park and he's really growing in confidence, and he gets out there and he bosses the games, and he's been doing it in the Championship. Who knows, given the opportunity, because you've got Maddison in that advanced role, you know, whichever position he plays in. Now, you're hoping he's going to be fit the majority of the time. You know, are you going to buy someone, put someone in there? And if so, where do they fit in? You're not going to buy someone to replace Maddison. Leicester, not at that level. Only if he was to go somewhere else, which I don't think that'll happen anytime soon. So you don't want someone with the calibre of an Ericsson, and then means Maddison's on the bench or vice versa. You know, Leicester haven't got that luxury at the moment. So it could be a big pre-season for Keenan Dewsbury Hall, that's for sure. Because I think certainly pre-season, Brendan will give him half a sniff.
I think so as well. I think defensively he thinks he's sorted in midfield, but I think just adding a few more goals from midfield. I mean, Maddison and Barnes chipped in with double figures this season. But besides them two, Vardy and Iheanacho, I mean, the goals return was pretty poor with Perez and Albrighton and under, you know, twos and threes, and that's it all season. So they desperately need to add to that. Let's finish off by going up top. They want another striker. Now, they need options as well to play different ways. We could see that Kelechi's done fantastically well in a two with Vardy. You're right, I think Brendan prefers to play with a three up top. But the two names that keep being mentioned in connection with Leicester, Odson Edouard at Celtic and Brentford's Ivan Toney. Now, I don't know what you make of these two. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Edouard, to be honest. Toney I've seen a little bit of, and he looks like the right type of player to me that would fit at Leicester, in terms of he's mobile, he'll stretch play, he'll run in behind, he'll do all the things that Brendan's been mentioning he's looking for in a striker. That's an interesting one for me. But the one that everybody's talking and expecting a deal to get done is Odson Edouard, obviously for the Celtic connection with Brendan. I wonder what you'd made of him.
Yeah, again, I'll be honest, I haven't seen a massive amount of either, but obviously you see little snippets here and there and you get a general idea what sort of players they are. And I think both would be warmly received by Leicester City supporters, you know, as not a second string striker at all, but someone to compete with Vardy and, of course, Iheanacho, but also to maybe playing slightly different roles. I think both, I know Toney and Edouard, in fairness, you know, they're both goal-scoring strikers, aren't they? But they have that ability to be able to be a little bit flexible, don't they? They're not, as far as I'm aware, totally out-and-out strikers. You know, to have that flexibility across the front line, although I wouldn't say either of them are, you know, inverted wingers, if you like. But, yeah, I like the sort of attitude of Toney, his story. It was Newcastle he came from, wasn't it?
Yes, it started in Newcastle, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't happen for him for whatever reason, but he was meant to be the next big thing, apparently, but it went slightly awry for whatever reason. And then, you know, he's put in the hard yards and rebuilt himself, and he's firing properly. And he looks to have that attitude and that edge. Not saying Edouard hasn't, but yeah, you can sort of picture him with the, you know, the little Leicester tag, if you like, the underdog, you know, fighting against the big guns. I know Leicester have moved up a level or two since those days, but, you know, there still is an element of that. And I think his story, his character that he brings in the way he plays would possibly go down well at the King Power, and he'd fit in rather nicely.
And I think as well, that whoever comes in has got to understand that they're not going to play every week. They're not going to be the main striker. Jamie Vardy will remain, as long as he's fit, the main striker. Kelechi will be the supporting striker. So they will have to be, they'll have to be that realisation that, you know, they're coming in, they're not going to play 38 Premier League games in the first season. So sometimes, I mean, it's whether Edouard wants to do that. I mean, he's the main man at Celtic. But Tony, yeah, certainly, I would imagine, would accept that role initially. I mean, he's 25. He's still got plenty of years ahead of him. I think that's more of a sensible one.
Yeah, they can be patient, but they'll get enough games, especially with the European challenge, you know, which lies ahead. So there's plenty of fixtures to fulfil and plenty of opportunities to come their way. And listen, if you do the business, when you get your chance, then you can soon change opinions as well. And as we've seen this season with Iheanacho, for instance. But you come there knowing that Vardy's the main man, but for how long? And then there are lots of twists and turns throughout the course of a season in terms of system and form and injuries, etc. We know that. So,
well, we've seen that with Kelechi, haven't we, this season?
Exactly, yeah. And Tony would, I don't know, straight away, he seems to me like it would fit, you know, probably a reasonable price tag. But the likes of Man City and Liverpool are not likely to go for him. So Leicester, if they did make the plunge, would probably be successful in obtaining him.
Well, it promises to be a fascinating summer in the transfer market. It will soon come round again as well, the new season. We'll have the fixtures out before you know it. Matt, thank you very much for all your help on the podcast this season. It's been invaluable. You've carried the show on your mighty shoulders.
Oh, yeah. You're building me up for a fall, aren't you, there? But thank you very much, Rob. Lovely of you to say. But you know that you're the main man, and that man who lurks in the darkness behind Joel and Adonis before him, two producers. Yeah. We know they're the integral part of it. But no, it's been a pleasure to be involved, and very appreciative of it. Looking forward to next season, hopefully, if things continue. But before that, we've got the spectacle of the European Championships to behold, haven't we? So
I'm looking forward to that. Six Leicester players involved in that, so we've all got something to keep us going till the season comes around. Thank you to all our listeners to 5001. Please join us again next season.
The Athletic.